The Oxford Sparks Podcast, Episode 10, Relationships, Part 2.
My name's Dr. Anna Machen. I'm based within the Department of Experimental Psychology at the University of Oxford. My research focuses on very close human personal relationships, so what we call dyadic relationships. And I'm interested in various types of relationships. So I look at close romantic relationships. I look at particularly fathers and babies, but parents and their children. I look at kinships, so close genetic relationships, and I look at very good close friends. It's only in the sort of last 5 to 10 years that fathers have become a focus of research, and particularly the sort of research where we try to understand how they actually form a relationship with their children. Because most of the research in the past has obviously, understandably, focused on the mother, but fathers don't have that what we call neurochemical shortcut to bonding with their children, because they don't have pregnancy, they don't have childbirth, and they don't breastfeed. So the big question has been, how do they form relationships with their children, but also what can they contribute to their child's development? Do they actually have a unique role to play in that child's life? We found, first of all, that they do have a unique role in their children's life. If we look cross-culturally, so we actually look globally, fathers appear to have a unique role in actually fostering independence and autonomy in their children. So particularly in Western populations where you have a lot of what we call rough and tumble play, so fathers play a lot with their children. What that's actually doing, it's not just fun for the two people involved, but it's actually fostering independence. It's saying to the child, you can go out, you can assess risk, you can take risks, and then you can come back to me, I'm a secure base. And that actually develops the child's independence for later life. And in my own research, talking to lots of new fathers in the Oxfordshire area, they all, without prompting, have come up with that. They see that as their really important goal in life. They want to bring up independent, socially responsible, compassionate people.
Anna explained how childbirth helps mothers form a bond with their baby sooner.
Childbirth is actually begun by the process of the release of a chemical called oxytocin. That actually starts the contraction of the womb. But one of the side effects of oxytocin, as probably most people know from the general press, is it actually lowers your inhibitions to forming relationships with people. It's known as the love hormone. So women have this massive flood of oxytocin when they give birth. And what it's also doing is when they see the baby for the first time, it's prompting a very, very fast, quick bond to form between that baby and the mother. Oxytocin is also involved in the letdown of milk. And so when you breastfeed, you also get another flood of oxytocin. So women have this neurochemical head start as compared to their male partners. With men, they don't really get that. We are starting to understand that there might be a slight synchronicity between oxytocin levels in expectant fathers and mothers, but it's in its very early stages. So at the moment, we don't think fathers have any particular effect coming from the fact that their partner's pregnant or they experience childbirth, whatever it might be. So what dads have to do is they have to have a behavioural mechanism to cause that to happen. And one of the big ones is rough and tumble play, because when you play with your child, there's lots of touch involved, there's lots of laughter, and that releases oxytocin and another very powerful bonding hormone called beta endorphin. And both of those start to encourage the father and the baby to start bonding with each other. The thing to say about fathers and babies bonding is it tends to take longer than it does in a woman because they don't have that head start. And I think that's what some men struggle with. And certainly some of the fathers I've followed in my research struggle with that. They don't have the immense flood of love that maybe a mother has within the first few days of a child's life. It can take actually up to 6 months when you get that proper real interaction between the baby and the father. There's communication going on, and that's when all those chemicals start to get prompted in the brain.
Anna and her team ran a project that followed 15 first-time fathers from 2 months before their child's birth to 6 months after.
What I was interested in was trying to understand what a father goes through as they transition to fatherhood. So we looked at first-time fathers, and during that time they answered a sequence of questionnaires, which tended to have repeated measures in them so that we could understand how their attitudes were changing over time. So one of the things we asked them was, what do you think a father's role is? And it was quite striking the difference between what they thought it would be before they actually had the baby and what they thought it was once they'd had the baby. So things like that, things about how they were interacting with the baby, and also things to do with things like their health and their mental health. So we could understand whether there was any change over time as they went through this period of change in their lives. Also, we took blood samples from them, and those blood samples were used to test for a range of neurochemicals that we think are involved in fatherhood bonding. Now, it's very much a pilot study because actually we don't know. So we're actually going off the back of quite a lot of research that's done on non-human primates who look after their children, their offspring. So we tested for things like testosterone level, we tested for oxytocin, we tested for a chemical prolactin, which is also involved in childbirth in humans and is also released in non-human primate males who look after their offspring. We looked at vasopressin, which it has been argued might be a male oxytocin, and we also looked at cortisol, which is the stress hormone. What we were trying to understand was, first of all, whether there was any change over time in those chemicals, but also how they might interact with each other. So whether some of them might obstruct each other or whether some of them might complement each other in actually trying to form the bond. We're starting to see certain patterns going on. So we seem to have replicated what's happened in other studies. There's a very famous Filipino study where men actually experience a drop in testosterone once they've had a child, and it never returns to pre-birth levels. And that seems to be associated with helping the father shift from looking for mates, which is testosterone helps you do that, to actually stop looking for mates and start nurturing. So it seems to be something that we've evolved to do so that fathers actually stay at the nest and they help look after the child. And it also seems that there's not that much fluctuation in oxytocin, and that also seems to be suggesting something that's been in the back of sort of fatherhood researchers' minds for a bit, and that oxytocin is a characteristic of the individual. So while you might get peaks in oxytocin, you have a baseline oxytocin that doesn't tend to change during your life, which tends to support the idea that people vary in their ability to form relationships and also in their nurturing capacities when they have children.
There is now increasing evidence that fathers can also suffer from postnatal depression.
The number of studies is small still because it's something, again, that's only been sort of in our midst for about 5 to 10 years. But between 4% and 10% seems to be the range of men who get postnatal depression. And what's interesting about male postnatal depression is, from a symptomology point of view, it's different to female postnatal depression. So when you have a man who's got postnatal depression, there tends to be a much higher proportion of anxiety than there is with women, and aggression and irritation. But also what fathers tend to do is, whereas mothers try to overcompensate sometimes when they have postnatal depression and tend to actually become quite intrusive in their relationship with the baby, men tend to withdraw, and they will withdraw from the baby and they will withdraw from the family. So it's something that's very different, and it seems to have different factors seem to increase the chance of a man actually getting postnatal depression. And the fathers in my particular studies that have had postnatal depression, it tends to be more a consequence of, in a way, trying to do it all and not being able to. So there is an element, and certainly other studies have found an element of, maybe if the partner or marital relationship isn't as good as it could be, that can be an influence on whether a man gets postnatal depression. But certainly in my study, when we looked at the impact of having the baby on the marital relationship, it wasn't a negative thing. And in a lot of cases, it was a positive thing. So for my study, that wasn't really a case. It was more that fathers had set themselves such high hurdles to get over in terms of what a good dad was. And why they had that, I think it's because partly the media these days is obsessed with parenting and is starting to become obsessed with fathering. We've got all these articles coming out saying, you know, a good father is an involved father, which is true. It is true, but it's not the easiest thing to be when you are still, in most cases, because your partner's on maternity leave, you're also still going out to work. So for a lot of our fathers, it was that struggle between work and home life, and living up to the high standard they'd set themselves. And particularly one of the problems we have was they would look at the mother-infant relationship and they'd see it as the gold standard. That's the gold standard. That's what I should be doing. And you're not going to do that because you're a different person and you do have a different relationship with that baby. So a lot of them felt they were failing there. They felt considerable guilt when they would go out to work, leave their partner with the baby. Maybe the baby was difficult, had colic, whatever. They felt guilt about leaving the partner to deal with that all on their own. And I think for some of them, some of the opportunities that are offered by father policies, such as the 2 weeks paternity leave, in some way that was great. But in other ways, what it tended to do was it would throw the father into 2 weeks of baby world and they'd submerge themselves and think it was the most wonderful thing in the world. And then they go back to work and there'd just be a line. And then they'd be seeing the baby, you know, one of my fathers saw the baby 15 minutes a day because he commuted to London. And that made it very, very difficult for him. So that kind of thing, trying to balance everything that's new in your life, trying to live up to those expectations. Often I think they just put a lot of pressure on themselves and there's a lot of stress.
Recent changes to UK law have meant that fathers can be more flexible in how they use their paternity leave.
Now you can split it up, and a lot of our dads said that actually they would prefer maybe to have a week when the baby was born, because actually a dad, particularly if your partner's breastfeeding, the baby is either feeding or asleep. And as a father, there's not much of a let in there to start building a relationship. And the dads in my study said, I would love this at the 6 month point when, you know, baby's feeding, they're crawling around, they're playing, they're giggling, it's great, to actually take some time then and build a relationship then. So yeah, I think we need to educate fathers about what it's going to be like, because I think if you normalize things and you say this is what it's going to be like, it's less of a shock when it actually happens.
You've been listening to the Oxford Sparks podcast, narrated by me, Lou Sumner, and produced by Steve Pritchard for the University of Oxford. For more fascinating science, visit www.oxfordsparks.ox.ac.uk.